Good afternoon. This is Ed Walsh with the Muhammad Citizen for the week of February 3rd, 2020. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with this article. It's under the banner of Cassano Murder Case. The headline reads, Judge Rules Jury Can Hear What Suspect Told Cops. Information Henslick Gave Police in 2018 at Issue. A Champaign County jury will be allowed to hear what Michael Henslick told Champaign County Sheriff's investigators about his alleged role in the rape and murder of his former high school classmate and mobile home park neighbor. Exactly how much the jury hears of his 5.5-hour interaction with police on August 28, 2018 remains to be determined as attorneys slog through pretrial motions in an attempt to refine their respective cases. Henslick, 31, of Muhammad, is set to be tried by a jury before Judge Heidi Ladd on February 10th for the first-degree murder of Holly Cassano, 22. The single working mother was discovered on November 2, 2009 by her mother, repeatedly stabbed to death in her own home on DuPage Street in the Candlewood Estates Mobile Home Park in Muhammad. Authorities later determined she had also been sexually assaulted. Despite an intensive ongoing investigation by Champaign County Sheriff's detectives, the killer went undetected for 9 years until a relatively new investigative technique using the combination of DNA and genealogy led police to Henslick. His defense team, First Assistant Public Defender Lindsay Yonkus and Assistant Public Defender Andrea Bergstrom, had sought to keep his statement from the jury, arguing that he had not voluntarily given it. In a 3-hour hearing, January 22nd, State's Attorney Julia Reitz and First Assistant State's Attorney Troy Lazar sought to prove otherwise by having the men involved in Henslick's arrest and subsequent interrogation on August 28, 2018, testify about the circumstances surrounding both. Lozar stepped in at the 11th hour to assist Reitz after their colleague, Assistant State's Attorney Matt Banach, broke his ankle over the weekend. Banach had done the majority of the state's preparation for the suppression hearing, but Lozar handled the questioning of the witnesses January 22nd. Ladd came down on the side of the state, finding that nothing that happened during the lengthy interview smacked of pressure, coercion, or trickery by the seasoned detectives. It was a cordial exchange, a knowing waiver, she said. Both the prosecutors and the defense attorneys had earlier agreed that Ladd should watch the videotaped statement prior to the hearing for the sake of judicial economy. On January 22nd, Sheriff's Captain Shane Cook testified that he made the initial contact with Henslick at Marketplace Mall about 6:15 p.m. on that Tuesday, explaining to him that he was being arrested for violating a no-contact order with his girlfriend, an alleged victim of domestic violence at Henslick's hands in April 2018. Cook said they made small talk while waiting outside the mall for Deputy Robert Hubbard to arrive in a regular squad car to drive Henslick to the sheriff's office. Although told he was arrested in connection with the domestic violence case, Henslick was about to be questioned as a suspect in the Cassano murder, the probable cause for which came together only days before his arrest. Hubbard described Henslick as a perfectly fine when he got in the car. He was wondering about what was going on, and I told him I didn't know much, Hubbard testified, adding there was no force, threat, or coercion by him to get Henslick to say anything. Once at the East Main Street Sheriff's Office, Sergeant Chris Darr, one of the detectives who had worked the murder investigation for several years, met Henslick at Hubbard's squad car, then walked the handcuffed suspect to an 8-by-10-foot interview room where he would remain for the next several hours, with the exception of a bathroom break. There, Detectives David Sherrick and Dwayne Ralphs began questioning Hanslick after Sherrigan read Hanslick his Miranda rights, which Hanslick said he understood. He was given water, was allowed to smoke, and was never left alone in the room. The detectives described how they sought to build a rapport with Hanslick and maintained they never threatened, touched, or coerced him. After 90 minutes, Sherrick said he decided to leave the room and let Dar come in. I felt we weren't getting anywhere with me asking the questions. Sergeant Dar is a good interviewer, Sherrick said. Dar and Rolfs then continued on, making little headway until about 10:30 p.m., some 3 hours and 45 minutes into the interview, when Rolfs said he decided to change my approach. Of particular concern to Yonkus was Rolfs raising his voice and dropping a portfolio from about a foot above the table onto the table, which made a loud noise on the body camera recording the interview. I didn't see a whole lot of reaction, Rolfs said of Hanslick's response to his more aggressive stance. He's leaning back in his chair with a cigarette in his hand. He was fairly stoic. I'm pleading with him to be open to share with us details of what happened that night, he said, adding that he asked Hanslick a series of direct intentional questions if he had killed her. After a few moments, Hanslick responded, I'm sorry. On cross-examination by Yonkus, Rolfs admitted he told Hanslick that his denials were wearing on me. He also admitted telling Hanslick, you're a big boy. You're a 30-year-old man. Now do big boy things. Stand up and be a man. I'm sick of sitting here listening to a bunch of bull coming out of your mouth. Lozar argued that Rolfs raising his voice and dropping a notebook on a table was absolutely insignificant when you look at it in comparison to everything else, and that Hanslick was still clearly in control of his decision to talk to police. Yonkus disagreed, saying Hanslick was boxed in by the detectives and that, after Hanslick said, I am sorry, and Rolfs continued to yell at him that his will was overcome. He was going to say whatever it took to get that person out of his face, Yonkus argued. Next up, we have this short comment. Work continued Tuesday on demolishing three houses and adjacent structures on land owned by the Village of Mahomet, just east of the Village Administration Center. Trustees voted unanimously November 22nd to hire Mid-State Excavation Incorporated to do the work at a cost of $35,890. The board in July agreed to purchase the five properties that include the homes being razed. Mid-State will level off the ground after demolition as part of the bid, and village workers will put down grass seed and do some grading of the land as well, Village Administrator Patrick Brown said in November. The area is slated for future use as a part of Mahomet's downtown master plan. Next, from the front page, we have this article under the banner of Mahomet Seymour School District, and the headline reads, Board Eyes Rising Legal Fees. The Mahomet Seymour Board of Education will delve deeper into the district's expenses for attorneys after a split vote by members at the regular meeting January 21st. Board member Megan Hennessy initiated the discussion, citing a marked increase in attorney fees in the last few years, particularly the last three. Her initial motion was that the board direct the superintendent to gather all communication district staff has had with the district lawyers over the last 3 years and forward that to the board. While the item was listed on the agenda up for discussion only, board members agreed to take action. After discussion, the board agreed to direct district attorneys to provide to the board all communication with Mahomet Seymour personnel over the last 3 years. Voting in favor of the move were Hennessy, Ken Keefe, Jeremy Henricks, Colleen Schultz, and Merle Giles, Board Secretary Max McComb, Board President, and Lori Larson, Vice President, cast no votes on the measure. I'd like to be able to review those communications and start to understand what the legal needs are for the district so that we can make appropriate adjustments, Hennessy said. According to Hennessy, the past 2 or 3 years have shown a rise by 763% in district legal fees. Trent Nuxall, a chief school business official for Muhammad Seymour, said the last 3 years of legal costs for the district are as follows. 2016-17, $41,766.71. 2017-18 is $153,605.53. 2018-19 is $360,501.75. And July to December of 2019 is $114,026.34. Superintendent Lindsay Hall said the rise, in general, simply accompanies an increase in need. In several meetings, we have publicly mentioned the fact that our legal bills have increased due to costs associated with litigation, she said. During discussion, January 21st, Larson questioned Hennessy as to why she wants information from past years. My question has to do with when you're talking about legal cases, you're talking about students and families and confidentiality, Larson said. After clarifying that, Hennessy, who was elected in spring 2019, wanted past year's information, she added, "Those are decisions that you weren't on the board and made decisions for, so I don't understand why things you didn't make decisions on, you need to reflect upon, because I don't think that shows the development of the current board functioning that we have now." I feel pretty strongly about that. If you're looking at finances alone, I think all of the cases that we have with students are very unique to the situation. So I think almost the way to look at this is, why are these incidences coming up? What is the result then from them? Larson added. It's so much more than the money. That's just my opinion. Hennessy replied, "I agree with you 100%, which is why I'd like to see the communication to understand those trends." She said that at a Illinois State Board of Education conference, it was made clear that school board members should be in on the communication back and forth with the attorneys. Muhammad Seymour District Attorney Jeff Funk confirmed that to Hennessy. She added, "I'm asking as a client to see the communication with the attorney," she said. Board members discussed the potential cost of the district attorneys providing the information requested. Hall suggested an alternative would be to have Funk participate in a special closed session with the board to answer questions. Keefe disagreed. "I think just inviting the attorneys, we don't know the questions to ask because we haven't seen what's been said," he said. McComb then said, "But we're asking their thoughts on why the bills are higher and what we can do to help curb them." But Hennessy added, "That's not my only thing. I've said that this is twofold. There's a trend that's going on here, and I think that it's dangerous based on the legal advice that we received at the conference from the IASB and from the attorney when I stopped him here to, as the client, not have any real knowledge about the information that's going back and forth. They made it very clear at IASB that the superintendent is not the client and that the board is responsible and that the board is the client," Hennessy said. "There seems to be a lot of communication going on just based on the numbers and how they seem to be increasing, and I would just like to see that." She added, "It feels like when I ask for a piece of information, I constantly have to justify why I want that piece of information. I don't feel like my reasons are invalid, but I feel like I'm trying to be talked out of them, or people are trying to re-navigate what it is that I'm asking for, so I'm just trying to be clear that as a board member and as the person responsible as the client, I think it's important that the board look at this. I would like to do that in my role as a board member. I think we should all be doing that, if I'm going to be honest. And so I'm asking that the information be sent to the board." I've been asking for 6 months now, Hennessy added. And we have a correction from last week. A story in last week's Citizen was unclear on the fact that Muhammad Seymour School Board member Colleen Schultz removed her policy proposal regarding restroom breaks from the board agenda at the beginning of the January 21st meeting. The newspaper regrets the error. And now on page 2, we have this article headlined, Nuxall Leaving Muhammad Seymour Schools. Trent Nuxall, chief school business official for the Muhammad Seymour School District, has submitted his resignation. Nuxall joined the district in January of 2011. He previously was an auditor for the Illinois State Board of Education from June of 2006 until December of 2010, according to his profile on LinkedIn. He is a graduate of Eastern Illinois University in Charleston. Muhammad Seymour Superintendent Lindsey Hall said district leaders will have no comment on Nuxall's departure until possibly at the Board of Education's next meeting, set for February 18th. Turning now to page A2, we have this article. It's the 10 Question Friday interview results. Each week, we interview a familiar face in town. This week, Christine Henricks chats with the Muhammad Citizen's Penny Weaver. Christine Henricks is a Muhammad native, wife, mother of four, and family physician. This past year, she, along with six other women, opened the Open Room on Main Street. Question 1, if you didn't have to sleep, what would you do with the extra time? I would fill it up with more projects, which is why I'm glad God forces us to sleep. Question 2, what hobby would you get into if time and money weren't an issue? I would love to learn to weave with a loom, to dye my own yarn and weave rugs or wall hangings. I would also love to get back to playing the piano. Question 3, what could you give a 45-minute presentation on with absolutely no preparation? Whatever I am studying or reading at the time, I love to read. I give lectures on teaching medicine cross-culturally, so I always have one of those ready to go, but I also love to teach on theological or biblical topics. Question 4, when you are old, what do you think children will ask you to tell a story about? Our adventures we've had on medical missions trips to Kenya. Question 5, what's the favorite piece of clothing you own or did own, and why? I love shoes of all kinds. My running shoes, however, bring me the most joy. I especially treasure my weekend runs with my sister, Erin. Question 6, what are the small things that would make your day better, and why is that? If/when I start my day with prayer, things go much better. A smile or a kind word always helps, too. Number 7, what's the luckiest thing that has happened to you, and when did it occur? I don't believe in luck, but certainly my biggest blessings are my family, my parents, sisters, husband, and children. Question 8, what is one of your favorite smells? The air on Kiowa Island, South Carolina. That smell relaxes me almost immediately. Question 9, what fictional place would you most like to go? Narnia. Question 10, if you could give advice based on your knowledge today to yourself as a 20-year-old, what would it be? Give up control and trust God's character over your experiences or feelings. And don't waste your time dating until you meet a nice boy in the medical school library. Sounds like there's a story in there. And question 10, since we couldn't stop at 10, this will be 11. One bonus question, what gets you fired up? Currently, it's the ways our phones have changed us. That's another book I read recently. And now, turning to page A3, we have these obituaries of local and area interests. After an 8-year courageous battle, Dennis B. Ash passed away peacefully with his family by his side on Friday, January 10th, 2020. at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. The burial will be private with his immediate family. There will be a celebration of life at Dennis's favorite outdoor venue in the springtime with friends and family. Memorial contributions can be made to Centerville United Methodist Church. Leona E. Satoff, 98, of Gifford, formerly of Urbana, passed away at 12:34 p.m. Wednesday, January 22, 2020, at Country Health in Gifford. Graveside services were at 2:30 p.m. Saturday, January 25, 2020, at Eden Park Cemetery in Rantoul. Pastor Bob Rasmussen officiated. Memorials may be made to Country Health in Gifford. Donald Don Wilkins, 65, of Urbana, passed away at 12:52 a.m. Friday, January 24, 2020, at home, surrounded by family. A memorial visitation was from 4 to 6 p.m. Monday, January 27, 2020, at Renner Wyckoff Chapel, Urbana. Casual attire was required. Military rites were performed by the U.S. Navy and the American Legion Post 71 at 4 p.m. at the funeral home prior to the visitation. Memorial contributions may be made in Don's name to the American Heart Association or the American Cancer Society. Condolences may be offered at RennerWyckoffChapel.com. And now, returning to the news and views on page A2, we have this article headlined, School Board Hears Update on Coming High School Work. The Mohammed Seymour Board of Education on January 21st discussed to proceeding with issuing about $1 million in debt certificates to fund summer 2020 projects led by renovations to the high school field house. Trent Nuxall, the district's chief school business official, explained that there are $600,000 in funds from the capital projects fund balance on hand to start with. Pending board approval, the debt certificates would be repaid using the 1% county school facilities tax to make the payments. Bids will be opened February 11th for the projects. Until then, Nuxall stressed, dollar figures are preliminary. The total estimated cost then is just over $1.3 million, Nuxall said. After a unanimous board vote January 21st, the district will pursue a school maintenance project grant, SMPG. This is a dollar-for-dollar state matching grant program providing awards up to $50,000 to grantees exclusively for the maintenance or upkeep of buildings or structures for educational purposes, Nuxall explained at the board meeting. A project may involve different types of work on a single building or structure, or may involve a single type of work on several buildings or structures, Nuxall said in a PowerPoint presentation. There is no limit to the cost of a project. However, grant awards shall not exceed $50,000 per grant award, and applicants shall provide a match from local funds equal to the grant amount requested, he stated. An applicant must not obligate funds or begin work on any of the projects listed on the application prior to submission of the application in IWAS. However, submission of the application does not guarantee a grant will be approved or awarded. All project activities must be expended or legally obligated within 2 years of disbursement by the state, Nuxall stated in the PowerPoint. Nuxall and Steve Curtis, Director of Facilities for Mohammed Seymour, answered board members' questions on the list of projects to be bid at the high school. Also at the January 21st meeting, the Board of Education held a first read on a policy proposed by Ken Keefe to create a set of public reports to offer data on district topics. The proposed policy states it shall be the role of the superintendent to oversee the production and publication of reports according to the criteria that the board defines. The superintendent shall present each report to the board at the next regular meeting following the due date of the report. The briefing met with some resistance from multiple board members who cited issues such as workload of the superintendent to produce such reports. Our next article today is headlined, 23-year-old who fired shots deemed unfit. Iowa man fired gun into air. Homeowner did same. Monticello. An Iowa man who allegedly fired shots in a BMET neighborhood almost 2 months ago has been found unfit to stand trial. Nematorbor Siaway, 23, of Cedar Rapids, had been charged in December in Piatt County Circuit Court with two counts of aggravated discharge of a weapon in connection with a bizarre incident that happened December 7th at a home on Mansfield Street on the south edge of the village. Piatt County Sheriff David Hunt said Siaway pulled into a driveway about 8:30 a.m. that Saturday, got out, and began firing a gun in the air that prompted the homeowner to get his shotgun and fire warning shots over Siaway's head. Siaway made strange remarks during the incident, which brought about 10 GET deputies and state troopers to the area. No one was injured in the approximately two-hour standoff between Siaway, who sat in a car much of the time, and police. Hunt said Siaway appeared intoxicated. Siaway was examined by Champaign psychiatrist Dr. Lawrence Jekyll, whose report was considered by the attorneys and Judge Jeremy Ritchie on Tuesday. The lawyers agreed with Jekyll's findings that Siaway is not currently able to understand the criminal charges against him or cooperate with his attorney. He was ordered to get inpatient treatment at a Department of Human Services facility. His case will be reviewed by Ritchie on February 25th. And next up is this article. It's headlined, New Eastwood Center Stein Okayed. Trustees also hear about new stoplight progress. The Village of Mahomet's Board of Trustees agreed Tuesday to allow modification of the sign for Eastwood Center, 804 Eastwood Drive. The item was on the consent agenda for the evening, which gets an up or down vote. It was discussed previously at the Village Board's January 14th study session. Officials said Eastwood Center's owner made the request for a slightly larger sign to feature Ace Hardware and CVS Pharmacy, plus the Eastwood Center name. The new signage will be a total of 60 square feet. In other business during the study session, trustees heard a report on the proposed stoplight at Lake of the Woods Road and U.S. Route 150/Oak Street. According to Ellen Hedrick, village engineer, the traffic signal permit request for that site has been made. Updates as requested by state reviewers were then made, and the village is awaiting approval any day. As soon as that green light is received for the stoplight installation to move forward, construction is expected to start, likely this summer. Trustees asked about any turn lane additions or other changes to Oak Street at that intersection, and Hedrick said that it is not in the plan for the site. The traffic signal engineer from IDOT said that just having the signal will work there, Hedrick noted. And finally for today, we have this article. It's on the sports page, and it's headlined, Girls Near 18 Wins. Victories Keep Coming. With the entire month of February remaining, the Lady Bulldogs have eclipsed last year's win total. The Bulldogs have won 3 in a row and sit at 15-9 overall. If Mahomet Seymour can get to 18 wins, it would be the best season since 2006-07, when Nathan Seal led the Bulldogs to a 23-4 record. The Bulldogs faced Normal West on Thursday, but results weren't available at press time. MS will host Lincoln on February 1st at 1:30 p.m. The Bulldogs will have 4 straight home games to conclude the regular season. They'll host Urbana on February 3rd at 7:30 p.m., and Charleston will come to town on February 6th at 7:30 p.m. This has been the Mahomet Citizen for the week of February 3rd, 2020. I look forward to reading with you again soon. For Illinois Radio Reader, I'm Ed Walsh.